أنتم برفقة SBS عربي 24.
Health Minister Greg Hunt remained optimistic despite the brief pause in the trials of AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, which will be manufactured in Australia, should it pass the trials successfully. The federal government has secured a deal to make 34 million doses available for Australians next year. SBS Arabic 24 spoke with Minister Hunt and asked him first about the reasons behind his optimism and confidence in the long-awaited vaccine and its potential availability next year.
Well, I've had the privilege of working with AstraZeneca and Oxford, as well as talking with the Australian leads of the University of Queensland and CSL vaccine. So in talking with and seeing the data coming out of both of those projects, I think there is cause for genuine cautious optimism. I've until now been very cautious, but as we've seen the data from the clinical trials come in, we see that there's a really strong response on the Oxford vaccine with regards to antibodies and T cells, showing that it's a development of immunity. More to be done to prove it fully. But having been briefed and having been briefed about the safety pause, which is a common thing in vaccine trials with many people, I was hopeful, and yes. Now that's been confirmed that the trials are safe to proceed, and I'm very confident about the effectiveness. Now, there's a lot more to learn, but we have purchasing and manufacturing agreements for both the Oxford vaccine and the University of Queensland molecular clamp, and that means the ability to provide protection for Australians. We'll have to see how effective they are, but all the signs are that they are effective.
The government is working on multiple fronts, just making sure we get the vaccine. Is the government in favour of making the vaccine mandatory? We've heard the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, ruling out this option. Are you personally in favour of making it mandatory?
No. So we're not going to make it mandatory. One of the things is Australia has been an extraordinary country with regards to vaccine adoption. And so what we've been able to do is achieve a 94.8% five-year-old vaccination rate. This year we've gone from 8 million flu vaccinations in 2017 to 11 million to 13 million, and then in 2020, 17 million flu vaccinations. So what that says is that we are a really strong nation in terms of vaccines and vaccination, and that we want to respect culture, respect religion, yes, respect identity and values, beliefs, but at the same time do everything we can to give people the confidence so as they will join in a national vaccination program that will ultimately save lives, protect lives, assist with our health and give people their freedoms back.
Minister Hunt, the problem is that people are comparing COVID-19 vaccine development to other vaccines throughout history, and some are not convinced about the safety of fast-tracked trials. When the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine trials paused, it's because one of the people in the trial had neurological symptoms. So people are concerned. And if you found out a significant percentage of people won't take the vaccine voluntarily, will you consider tying it to social welfare payments?
So we have an independent expert panel that will be providing advice, and so we haven't formed any views. We haven't proposed to take any steps with regards to compulsion. We'll be guided by the medical experts. The important thing to note is that every year we have a new flu vaccine. So in any year, the flu vaccine has been developed within the last 12 months. It's in response to the annual mutation. And so we are, as a world and as a nation, very familiar with rapid vaccine development, subject to the safety requirements. And the safety is our number one thing. So right now we want to give people the confidence that any vaccine that we adopt will be safe. It will have been through the clinical trials, the British regulators and the Australian regulator in the case of Oxford, and the clinical trials and the Australian regulators, and then our own vaccine committee with regards to the Queensland molecular clamp.
Minister Hunt, you have previously said last month that Australians who reject the coronavirus vaccine could lose access to some welfare payments, and we're a nation where 35% of our budget goes to social security and welfare, so in a way it'll be making it mandatory. Where do you stand at this today?
We're against mandatory vaccines. And then with regards to any conditions or incentives, they'll be subject to the advice of the medical expert panel. So we're being cautious in terms of not ruling things in or out or making decisions on those. We'll have the best experts in the country. I'll just await for their advice and we'll respond to that.
What would you say to Australians who would rather catch the coronavirus and not take the vaccine? They say maybe they have a better chance recovering the actual virus than taking a vaccine that's new. What do you say to these people?
I respect the views, but respectfully disagree. And the reason I say that is because what we've had is a very rigorous safety process, and nothing will be improved until the toughest regulators in the world in Australia believe that it's safe and believe that it's effective. And then just this year, 17 million flu vaccinations in Australia. That's an incredible effort, up from 8 million 3 years ago. So we've more than doubled the flu vaccination rate in Australia.
But when you compare flu to coronavirus, do you think that's a fair comparison? Because people would still have these concerns, and it's just new. It's a new virus. It's going to be a new vaccine, and nobody would guarantee the long-term side effects of such a newly developed vaccine.
Well, our safety standards for the flu vaccine or COVID vaccine, rubella, for any of our vaccines are all at the same level, because any vaccine which is being widely distributed, particularly when you're dealing with vaccines that are given to young children, so our most precious of all, we demand the absolute highest levels of safety.
So you're counting on people's judgment, and at the very same time, anti-vaxxers are gaining momentum on social media, and just more and more people every day are becoming convinced with those conspiracy theories about the vaccine, about the coronavirus. Can we move on to the international border closure? It has been described as a measure to be amongst the toughest in the world. When will the border open?
So we don't have a date, but we've just announced this week the lifting of caps with an extra 2,000 people. We want to see as many Australians home by Christmas as possible. Some of the states and territories had placed low limits on their hotel quarantine systems, lower than their capacity. And we are working with them after the review by Jane Holton that indicated they have greater capacity to make sure that we can bring Australians home. And bringing them home is something that will allow families that have been separated, people that had been overseas for whether it was a humanitarian reason, a compassionate reason, whether they were working or studying abroad or travelling. You know, what we want to do is bring them home. At the same time, the hotel quarantine system is as difficult as it's been for individuals to go through it. And I've been through quarantine once, and I'm actually speaking to you from quarantine for a second time as we prepare for Parliament in the ACT.
But at the beginning of the pandemic, returning travellers from China were quarantined in Christmas Island. Why hasn't the government continued in that direction, allowing more Australians to come back home under this government quarantine system in the island?
Christmas Island would only allow up to 200 people at any one time, whereas the hotel quarantine system allows thousands. And so that would be once every 2.5 weeks, allowing 14 days and then cleaning, transition time afterwards. So once every 2.5 or 3 weeks, you'd have 200 people. So it's been used for emergency, and we keep it there as the emergency safeguard, that if there has to be an evacuation, as there was with the Diamond Princess or Wuhan. So it's a critical facility.
In the same context, why wouldn't the government consider increasing the capacity of hotel quarantine in the Northern Territory or Western Australia, for example, to boost the income of hotels? Why does New South Wales take up the biggest percentage of returning travellers?
That's exactly what we've done this week. You're, I think, spot on. There is increased capacity and increased ability. That's now been shown by Jane Holton's independent review. That's why we've allowed and announced the increase in the caps, because the hotel quarantine system can take it. And we do encourage the other states and territories to lift a greater portion of the burden, commensurate with their abilities. If we can encourage the states and territories to use that system, which has been established, which we know can be safe, we do want to see some authority figures in charge, whether it's the ADF, the Defence Force or the police.
If you look at the budget forecast, it is expecting the restrictions to be lifted between March to July. Is that all linked to the vaccine? What if we don't end up with a vaccine this year? What's going to happen? Are we going to remain locked up in Australia?
As the world gets on top of it, irrespective of a vaccine, there'll be greater capacity. I can certainly see that hotel quarantine will be a significant part of the system for the foreseeable future. But on balance, my clear view now, and I've been very cautious about this through the course of the year, is that the world is likely to have effective vaccines, not just one, but effective vaccines in 2021. And that's what will open up the ability for Australians to travel and for people to come to Australia.
So let's say we get the vaccine by next year. Wouldn't it take at least a year to make sure every Australian is vaccinated? That's why I'm asking this, and whether opening the border is linked directly to the vaccine, because I'm sure it's going to be divided into different stages, vaccinating the most vulnerable, the elderly, the health workers or the frontline workers, and then it's going to be our turn. So do we have to wait until we get vaccinated before we think about travelling or making travel plans?
We've been cautious, and we currently have in place the extension of the outbound and incoming travel restrictions, the outbound ones lasting until December the 17th. And so we look at these in three-month periods, and we don't try to predict beyond that. I apologise. It's an entirely fair and reasonable question. But because the disease progression has changed so quickly around the world. We conquered it much more quickly than expected in the first wave in Australia. It took off in Victoria more quickly than anybody had expected. We have to judge the circumstances. So during 2021, I'm expecting a significant increase in both inbound and outgoing travel to and from Australia.
From a health perspective, do you see Australia doing something similar to what other countries are doing, putting together lists where certain countries, nationals from certain countries, get the priority to get into Australia, where the epidemiological situation is okay? More like a travel bubble? Is that still on the table?
We're certainly supportive of domestic travel bubble. We think Victoria apart, there's the case now for a full national domestic travel bubble. We know that Victoria still has to completely get itself into a very strong position. But internationally, we've also discussed this idea of travel bubbles. New Zealand is the first one. We've had discussions with New Zealand. We're progressing that. And, you know, we're very open to that possibility. I think that that is most likely to be the first nation, and that would then provide a model for other nations. And, you know, the Pacific Islands have very, very low or most cases, no cases. And so we would be an important partner for them and vice versa. And so that model of progressive opening of the borders, subject to case numbers at home and abroad and the vaccine, the use of hotel quarantine in the absence of vaccine, and the travel bubble, that's exactly the plan that we have for progressively reintegrating Australia with the world.
When flying to the Middle East and Arab countries could possibly come back? I know you might not have the answer, but I just have to ask you.
No, it's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. We still have flights leaving Australia and coming back to Australia, but the reasons for leaving are in relation, and we've had well over 20,000 people leave Australia under exemptions for compassionate, for relocation, if they live overseas and they've been here, for critical national or critical business needs. So there are many reasons, and well over 20,000 exemptions that have been granted for leaving, and we've had over 100,000 people come back through hotel quarantine. So people are going to and from, but not necessarily on direct flights. So that process will continue, but as we're able to safely allow Australians to leave and return as we have more capacity through the quarantine system and as we have capacity through the travel bubbles, which would themselves take pressure off the quarantine system, then there'll be more and more capacity for Australians to leave and return.
Minister Hunt, just last question. Do you think the government is ready for the worst-case scenario where we don't see a vaccine in 2-3 years?
Yes, we are. Our hospital system is strong. Our primary care system is strong. We've built defences in our aged care system where, even though we've had terrible tragedies in Victoria and two facilities in New South Wales, we have saved thousands and thousands of lives through the work of our healthcare workers, our aged care workers. So we've built that capacity and we're building COVID-safe mechanisms as a country.
How many cases can we take a day, worst-case scenario?
I don't want to speculate on that. What I'd say is that we have a ventilated hospital capacity of up to 7,500 people on ventilation if we were to face a catastrophic situation. So I think about it in terms of that. What we're seeing out of Europe is lower rates of hospital admission than in the first wave for a variety of different reasons, and lower mortality rates, which is a very important thing for the world to see. But still, the world is losing between, 4,000 and 6,000 people a day, depending on the daily figures, and having over 250,000 a day acquire the disease. So we're still in a pandemic, and last week saw the highest daily figures ever. And so the numbers are growing, and the rate of cases is continuing to hit daily peaks each week. And so there's a way to travel on the global disease. Domestically, we're very strong. The vaccine will be important.
Is there a possibility that the vaccine will be ready early next year?
Yes. So we're expecting it in the first half of 2021. We're in particular presuming that it's likely to be available in the first quarter of 2021, with the first vaccines potentially, subject to trials, subject to safety, subject to approvals, available in January and February for the priority groups.
I really hope so. Thank you so much for your time, Minister Hunt.
Thanks, Harris.
هل تريدون الاستماع إلى المزيد من هذه القصص؟ استمعوا من خلال أبل بودكاست، جوجل بودكاست، سبوتيفاي أو من أينما تحصلون على البودكاست.